This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Senator Sherrod Brown and his Democratic colleagues are pushing for legislation to protect renters and property owners as the pandemic takes both a health and economic toll. I spoke with Senator Brown from D.C. on Wednesday. Here is our pre-recorded interview. Senator Sherrod Brown joins us now from Washington. Senator, thank you so much for being with us.
Good to be back on your show. Thank you, Michael.
Obviously, we're still dealing with the grips of this COVID-19 pandemic. And in addition to the health concerns, there are growing economic frustrations at the local level, state level, federal level. Cities like Cincinnati struggling financially right now. What's on the horizon that you see to help cities like Cincinnati get the financial help they need?
Well, it depends on what the senator that represents just south of Cincinnati is willing to do. I mean, Senator McConnell, the leading Republican in the Senate, the majority leader, has said there's no urgency to helping these communities. At one point, he said, along the lines of Marie Antoinette, let them eat cake. He said, let them go bankrupt. He kind of backed off that. But local officials, I'm on the phone with local officials all the time of both parties. Sometimes I don't know their party, but they're all saying the same thing, that this isn't a question of they all of a sudden have a lot more work to do with the coronavirus. What they're saying is that the budget dropped, their revenues just dropped off the cliff. They're not getting income tax revenues like they were. They're not getting sales tax revenues or in case of transit systems, sometimes other revenues from the fare box or from property tax or however each system is set up. But Congress has got to do this. We're going to see police laid off. We're going to see firefighters laid off. We're going to see county services cut back, everything from children's services for children that have been victims of abuse, all the kinds of things that local governments do, schools, everything, unless Senator McConnell decides to negotiate and move forward with the next package. There's a package that's going to pass the House Friday, going to pass right away, it looks like, and we should be looking seriously at that and begin the negotiations.
We got an email from Dayton Mayor Nan Whaley. I believe it was on your behalf, because she cites your name as well and says that tens of thousands of Dayton workers have filed for unemployment. This crisis will only become more painful for hardworking families if Congress doesn't do something about it. In Dayton, we've been through so much and we've gotten through it together. That's what we're going to do now, too. But we need McConnell and leaders in Washington to do their part. And that means we all need to speak out and take action. So that's a call to action email from Mayor Nan Whaley that includes a reference to you, Senator Brown. But what exactly does that mean? What type of message do you think the people of these communities should send to the Congress?
Well, as people slowly go back to work, as hospitals begin to do some surgeries that they weren't doing before, as some manufacturing goes back to work, some construction workers, I don't think people are rushing back to get to certain kinds of service, there's certain kinds of activities before, because people are still very rightly concerned that the economy is opening a little too quickly just to take care of people. I mean, we first of all need to make sure workers are protected with protective equipment they need. The President of the United States, because, I mean, I look at it this way. Governor DeWine, this is not a part of the statement. Governor DeWine, a Republican, I'm a Democrat, has generally done things right. He was engaged early and aggressively, and I would predict with certainty that fewer Ohioans will get sick and die because of Governor DeWine's actions. I would say with equal certainty that more Americans will die because President Trump came to this much too late. He continued to deny it, saying it would go away, calling it a Democratic hoax, all the things that he does. And then since then, he's put no real effort out there to scale up testing and to have a national effort to produce the kind of protective equipment we need. So the first thing we do is make sure that people in the workplace are protected, from the grocery store worker at Kroger to the drugstore clerk, to the person doing the laundry at hospitals, to the nurse, to the city bus drivers in Cincinnati and Dayton. All of them need the protective equipment. And second, we should be providing these moderate wage or low wage hourly workers with pandemic pay. The people I just mentioned, the bus driver, the security people, the custodians, work at $10 and $12 and $15 an hour. They're exposed to the virus every day. They come home potentially having the anxiety that they may be infecting others and their families, they ought to be paid more during this pandemic. And that's one of the things Congress should include in this package.
And that's something that we discussed on Wednesday's show was there are restaurants that will be reopening here in Cincinnati on Friday. And some of the concern is that, sure, these folks are aware that there's a health crisis still lingering in our midst, but they have to get back to work because they've got no guarantee from the federal government that they will be compensated again. And so they've got to go to work in order to make money. Is that something you're hearing from constituents? And is there something that you hope to do about that?
Yeah, people have a terrible choice here. I mean, it's a little bit like sick pay. If you're a single parent and you get sick, do you stay home and give up the pay, or do you go to work and potentially infecting others or getting sicker? And that's a terrible choice we're making people make because we don't have the kind of sick day policies that we ought to have. It's complicated by the virus. But we should be, first of all, we're going to see if we don't do this right and provide the protective equipment and help these workers, we're going to see this flare up again, and we're going to see more coronavirus. And keep in mind, right now, the president's comments notwithstanding, we are 5% of the world's population. We have 32% of the world's positive diagnoses of coronavirus. We have about 28% of the world's death in this country. Taiwan has had 6 people die in a country of 23 million people. They're located 600 miles from where, from Wuhan, the center of this. The president has failed to get the protective equipment. He's failed to scale up testing. He's blamed it on the governors when the governors don't have the wherewithal to organize the national effort to do this. So as we open, we need to accelerate the testing. We need to get the equipment to people. Then we need to do some things like making sure people don't lose their apartments when they've lost their jobs, that unemployment benefits go to people if they're not called back to work, that we help local governments. I'm concerned that a month or two from now, when people are starting to go back to work, that local governments, if Senator McConnell, the majority leader of the Senate from Kentucky, if he doesn't step up, I'm concerned that we will not have the help for local government. And they're going to face all kinds of layoffs. The county of Hamilton County, city of Cincinnati, city of Dayton, the suburban communities. I talk to mayors all the time and county commissioners. They're under real duress because their revenues have shrunk so dramatically. And they're going to have to start laying off police and fire and deputy sheriffs and people that do all the kinds of services that people really only notice when they aren't there.
And we're talking with Senator Sherrod Brown, the Democrat from Ohio. And Senator Brown, to that end, you're a co-sponsor along with 24 of your Democratic colleagues in the U.S. Senate for some bills that would authorize $100 billion for emergency rental assistance and also to send funds to community states and tribes through an existing federal temporary rental assistance program. What are the chances that such legislation makes it through the Senate?
Well, it's my legislation. We wrote it in conjunction with the House of Representatives. What they're doing, they passed it in the House. They're about to pass it in the House this week. We need Senator McConnell to step up. The entire Democratic caucus, I would think, or almost everybody of the 47 of us will vote for it. We only need a few Republicans to support it. If Senator McConnell would support it and get the president on board, we could do it. But right now, we passed a partial moratorium so that people aren't evicted during this crisis. But that only means that for 120 days, for 4 months, people can get a break on their rent. But if they're laid off, they can't otherwise. But 4 months from now, they're going to owe all that rent for 4 months and that balloon payment. And nobody that's laid off can possibly afford to pay 4 months of rent. So we've got to act now. It's not just for the renters. It's also for the landlords, for the retired couple that bought a duplex and rents the other half out and depends on that rental income to supplement their Social Security. It's about a lot of small companies that might run 50 rental units, and they have to pay their mortgage or have to pay their investors and pay for the water and the sewer and all that. So if people can't pay their rent, it affects people all up and down the line. That's why we've got to move on this emergency rental assistance.
And Senator, I know you got to run, but I'm hoping you can help us break down that funding. We said $100 billion, but how would it work? How would it benefit a renter directly, or, as you mentioned, that retired couple that bought the duplex?
Well, it would be administered by local designees, and by state designees of people who have done these kinds of programs before when there's been emergency rental assistance. It would only be available to people who have who are in this case paying rent, who have lost their jobs, who are at risk of eviction. And we've done this before on a much smaller scale, so we know how to do it. We also need to look at emergency assistance for those who are about to be foreclosed on. My wife and I live in a zip code in Cleveland, 44105, and 2007 more foreclosures in that zip code than any zip code in the United States. And I see what that does to families. I see what it does to neighborhoods when large numbers of people lose their, are evicted from their homes or lose their homes. They're not being able to pay their mortgage because of chronic unemployment. And a whole lives turn upside down, and people often don't recover from that. The financial loss, the loss of their belongings, what it's meant to their, what it means to their children, the change school districts and the upheaval in their lives. You put on top of that a pandemic when homelessness or moving in with relatives is even more dangerous because of the chance of contracting this virus. And it's a place our society should not want to go. I'm not trying to just paint a dark picture. I'm just saying we need to prevent foreclosures and evictions, especially during this pandemic.
Senator Sherrod Brown, Democrat of Ohio, thank you so much for your time.
We'll do it again. Thanks, Michael.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Foreclosures appear to be rising, and there is concern that rules related to mortgages right now are changing so rapidly and confusingly that property owners can't keep up. So joining us now by phone are Legal Aid of Southwest Ohio managing attorneys Stephanie Moe. Stephanie, welcome to you.
Hi, Michael.
And Nick DiNardo. Nick, welcome back.
Great, thanks.
And also with us is Ed Hensley. He's the current president of the Ohio Mortgage Bankers Association and is also senior vice president and senior mortgage executive for WesBanco. Ed, welcome to you also.
Thank you, Michael.
The number to join our conversation is 513-419-7100, or email your questions or comments to talk at wvxu.org. We'll look for your comments and questions as well on our Facebook and Twitter accounts, so you can find us there online. I want to start with our representatives from Legal Aid, Nick and Stephanie. What are we seeing out there right now in the state of this pandemic as it relates to people's ability to stay inside their homes?
Michael, on the front of foreclosures, it is tremendously challenging, but there has been some federal help, just not really enough. About 8% of mortgage loans are currently in a forbearance. Forbearance is where there's a temporary suspension of a borrower's ability to make the full mortgage payment, and it's an agreement the lender and homeowner enter into. But about 22% of mortgage bills were not paid the first week in May, indicating that there are a lot of homeowners out there who are just not even able to access programs that are helpful for people. Here in the Ohio area, where Nick and I work, there's not a statewide eviction or foreclosure moratorium. There's protections based on the Federal CARES Act for homeowners and renters in our community, but you know, many parts of that are set to expire, and it does not include all tenants or all homeowners. About 30% of mortgages are not covered by the Federal CARES Act foreclosure moratorium currently in place. So there's certainly a lot of people who are homeowners struggling right now and looking for help from servicers, from government, from others out there.
And Nick, I'm wondering what this says about the state of the economy prior to the pandemic. We were supposedly in a very good economy based on a lot of different metrics, but here we are 6 to 8 weeks into this pandemic, into this shutdown with people losing their jobs, and now here they are vulnerable to going into foreclosure situations. What do we learn from that?
Well, I think one thing we've noticed is there was already an eviction crisis. So for renters, they were already in crisis prior to COVID striking. And so now they're that much worse off. We have many people laid off their jobs who can't pay the rent. Similarly, we have many people who are laid off now who are working paycheck to paycheck who can't afford their mortgage payments. So what we're seeing is basically a bunch of cases that are building up here. Hamilton County courts are going to open on June 1st, and that's when some of those folks will start to face foreclosure, start to face eviction. So we have a real crisis looming that's built on the crisis we already had. Even with that strong economy, we were still having far more people being evicted and being foreclosed on than the national average in Cincinnati.
Stephanie, what are clients of Legal Aid saying their biggest concerns are or their biggest challenges are when they contact your organization?
There's just a lot of not knowing about what options there are and wondering, you know, what help is available, I think is really what people are calling us wondering. For our clients who are low-income clients in our community, it's really important to understand just how fragile, as Nick said, they were already, and then what happened here in March and April. I think the Federal Reserve Chairman yesterday shared a statistic, Michael, that was just so alarming, but it's certainly what we're seeing, that nearly 40% of households making less than $40,000 a year lost their job in March. And so those people have no way to be able to pay mortgage, to pay assistance. And one of the challenges they're facing is that when they reach out to help, particularly on the mortgage front, to servicers, it's been very difficult sometimes to even get a hold of anyone. And then the information they're receiving has been confusing. So even though there's sort of a patchwork of some programs starting to come through and be available to provide assistance to renters or homeowners, again, the need is just far greater than what's available. And how it's being communicated to folks is not always real clear and in a way that makes them feel like this is an option that we can take advantage of.
And we're talking with Nick DiNardo and Stephanie Mose from Legal Aid of Southwest Ohio. And also with us on the line is Ed Hensley. He's president of the Ohio Mortgage Bankers Association. Ed, I imagine that this isn't good news for banks either. Banks would want people to be making their payments, right?
Well, correct. I mean, we don't want to foreclose on people. That's not what our goals are. And to kind of reiterate the point, there, when the CARES Act first came out, there was a lot of confusion. There wasn't a lot of direction from FHFA, which regulates both Fannie and Freddie. There was talk, well, you know, gee, you're getting a 3-month forbearance, but on the fourth month, you got to make 4 months payments. Kind of like Senator Brown said, if you're laid off, that's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. So literally yesterday, they put out new guidance where people can get 12 months worth of forbearance, which the payments are going to be basically added on to the end of the loan. So they can pay them off when, you know, as the mortgage goes off in time or if they refinance it or sell the property. So that was a big clarification. And they also clarified that there would be no lump sum payments due. That was a big clarification because some of the bigger servicers were telling people, hey, you're going to month four, month five, month six, you're going to have to make all these payments at one time. That just wasn't feasible. You've also, as the prior speaker said, about 70% of the mortgages are held in the secondary market. You know, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA. There are, you know, roughly 30% that belong to financial institutions and other entities. And, you know, there may not be consistency on that end. I think, you know, it changes every single day. As I told someone yesterday, we're in uncharted waters here. So we're trying to get this organized the best we can, get direction from the government on what really is happening here and how we can help people.
You call this uncharted water, Ed. I'm wondering if you can just speak for the banking industry in general, in addition to the mortgage sector, because lending is playing a significant responsibility in the country's attempt to recover as best it can while in the process of still dealing with the virus that's caused this pandemic. Just talk a little bit about your experience now. You have a long history in the banking industry. What this compares to, if anything, or what type of legacy this period may leave?
Well, I think you know, the first thing that kind of comes to mind is the financial crisis of 2007 and 2008, when we had a bubble that burst and, you know, values plummeted, and there was a lot of what was called subprime loans at the time that, you know, were overvalued, however you want to talk about it. This is caused by a pandemic. It happened very quickly. It happened all at once. We haven't had to deal with this before. Thus far, we have not seen a collapse of values. Real estate values seem to be holding relatively stable, so a little bit different. But that delinquency rate is accelerating at a much higher pace than it did before with the layoffs and things along those lines. So I think one of the things that we have to kind of keep an eye on is people come back to work. You know, how is that going to affect? Are they going to be at full pay? How many people are never coming back and are going to have to look for, you know, new employment? Those are all the unknown factors that we're dealing with at the current time. And we have to keep an eye on that.
That's Ed Hensley, president of the Ohio Mortgage Bankers Association. He's also a senior vice president and senior mortgage executive for West Banco. We're also joined today by Nick DiNardo and Stephanie Mose, managing partners at Legal Aid of Southwest Ohio. Nick, let me throw a question your way. What type of legal protections are available in this current climate to folks who are possibly facing foreclosure and or eviction, depending on the situation?
Well, there is no statewide moratorium on evictions right now, and there is coverage of some evictions and some foreclosures if they have federal backing. But that doesn't cover a lot of people who could be facing eviction hearings as soon as June 1st. So what we're trying to do is let those tenants know what their rights are and what options are out there. The bottom line is, under Ohio law, if you don't pay the rent, the landlord can file an eviction against you for non-payment. Similarly, if you have a mortgage and you miss several payments, the foreclosure process can begin. I think the difference between the two is the eviction process moves much quicker. Start to finish, the eviction process takes about a month, whereas a foreclosure will go on for many months before you can lose your home if you own it. So what we've been trying to do is let people know that they do have a duty to pay rent. They should be communicating with their landlords. If they're a homeowner, they should be communicating with their banks. And there are some funds available to help people who have, you know, emergency need, who've missed 1 or 2 months of either a mortgage payment or rent and need some assistance. And Legal Aid is working with our community partners, the Community Action Agency, and St. Vincent de Paul to help provide as much assistance as we can to keep those families housed. What we really don't want to see is, you know, families being evicted and put on the streets or losing their family homes to foreclosure. The shelters are simply already at capacity now based on this crisis. And so we need to find ways to keep families in their homes.
According to some reporting from Dan Horn, a friend of the show and reporter at Cincinnati Inquirer, there's a quote from Andrew Thomas Watts, a leader of the Cincinnati Tenants Union, in this report from Dan Horn at the Inquirer. And he says, quote, "Cincinnati has one of the least stable housing structures. This would have been an issue this year even without the coronavirus." Stephanie, is that something that you can agree with based on what you see every day as an attorney at Legal Aid of Southwest Ohio?
Michael, absolutely. And we certainly work with a number of groups who, as Nick stated, have been struggling to find affordable housing in our community. There's a lot of reporting out there. Community Building Institute at Xavier University put out a report not that long ago stating that, especially for lower-income tenants, there's a tremendous shortage of maybe 40,000 units in our community that do not exist, that are affordable to people. And so, absolutely, especially for those who were in the rental market, we have a relatively unaffordable rental market and just not enough affordable units.
Okay, so those are some of the issues facing renters. For those who own their properties, what are some of the legal solutions for the potential threat of foreclosure, Stephanie?
So, you know, I think Ed spoke a little bit about some great news did come out here in the last 24 hours on a couple of different fronts. First of all, for loans that are covered, that are federally backed, such as FHA, Fannie Mae, or Freddie Mac, the moratorium was just extended until the end of June, at least through June 30th, the federal moratorium. Again, no moratorium at the state level. But for about 70% of the mortgage holders, there is now this little bit of a pause on the filing or moving forward with foreclosures. Really, reaching out to your servicer or lender right away is so important for homeowners to try to ask for forbearances, which is, again, that ability to stop or suspend making your payments or making your full payments for a period of time. That can be now, again, as Ed said, up to a year or two 180-day periods. And people need to really feel comfortable that there is help for many of the loans in terms of an option other than just having to pay the lump sum. It truly was very confusing for many homeowners, and the servicers and lenders were not communicating clearly that options were available. However, I do think in light of what happened with FHFA here today that there's going to be some really good news that they can take advantage of that. For some homeowners, however, they may need to reach out to for other assistance, to talk to housing counselors in our community, to reach out to Legal Aid, because unfortunately there just isn't an across-the-board solution for all homeowners. There's not anything that every lender is required to do at this time, and many homeowners are going to fall through the holes We really need to reach agreement that during this national health and economic crisis that no one should be forced from their home, neither through eviction nor foreclosure. And that's where we need to come as a community, as a state, nationally, and certainly we're hoping that more lenders and servicers will get there on the foreclosure front and put their own moratoriums in place and their own protections for homeowners.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. My guests today are Nick DiNardo and Stephanie Mose, both managing attorneys at Legal Aid of Southwest Ohio. And we're also joined on the phone by Ed Hensley. He's president of the Ohio Mortgage Bankers Association. Ed, I want to ask you the same question. You come at this from a different perspective, though everyone seems to be in agreement that you want to keep people in their homes. What's your advice to someone who calls and says, look, I'm facing some difficulties. What are my options here?
I think communication is the key. One of the things I was very concerned about, was very vocal with the state of Ohio, actually, was when the CARES Act came out, that, you know, with a 3-month moratorium, if literally people had to make, you know, 4 months worth of payments at one time, that was going to be a disaster. That would you know, really just cause a lot of foreclosures and things like that. So this clarification is going to take care of a lot of that. But the key is contacting your lender, explaining your situation. I know there was a lot of frustration early on. People couldn't get through, especially to some of the larger servicers. I think they've worked their way through that quite a bit. There was some confusion. I saw an article yesterday on CNBC that said a lot of people had called their lender inquiring about forbearance and didn't necessarily want to do it, but were placed in it automatically. That's not good either. But again, communication of what you're trying to do, what the hardship is, and what your options are. I heard a statistic yesterday on a call that 40% of the people that are in forbearance right now are making some sort of payment, if not the full payment, but are anticipating that their income is going to go down as this crisis goes forward. So they've taken the proactive step, and that's what I would encourage. Be proactive with your lender. Communicate. See what your options are.
So when you say
news yesterday, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, yeah, and I want you to hold that thought, but I just want to make sure I understand. These are people who have gotten the opportunity to delay payments, but are continuing to make the full amount payment. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we've had some people do that. We've actually run into some cases, but they want to be proactive in case something happens. There was a lot of confusion as to what would happen if you took forbearance. Was it going to be a mark against your credit? And I think the CARES Act said, no, that wasn't going to be a negatory on your credit. So people are working through that as well. I think by the guidance that came out yesterday of no lump sum payments, and you could spread this out up to 12 months, really should help those servicers explain this to people now as they inquire as to what's going to happen. And I think there'll be more clarification as we go forward here.
That does seem to be the case, that we're learning a lot about the proposed remedies to some of these issues that we're facing, and they are changing. Ed, do you think they're changing too quickly? Are they coming in a way that customers, clients, and the industry itself can understand and digest and execute appropriately?
Well, I think early on, the rules were rushed out with no clarification. Lenders were left to do some interpretation of their own. Thus, that lump sum payment option that was running rampant out there. I think that the lenders expressed their concern, wanted a voice in the process. National MBA has been very, very aggressive in working with FHFA to clarify these points and what the long-term options may be. I think they are in support of Senator Brown's proposal on rents. I think they endorsed that, from what I understand, a day or two ago. So I think, the industry was trying to be proactive as well, because we need a clarification, of what was going to happen and how we could help people. We want to help people. We don't want to put them in a negative situation.
Ed, let me ask you this. You referenced the beginning of the Great Recession, where you see some similarities to the experience you're going through now in the banking industry. So that was about a dozen years ago when that really started to balloon. I'm wondering what you see on the other side of this as it relates to housing. We've seen the market recover pretty significantly as it relates to housing and improve significantly over the years since then. What changes happen now on the other side of this?
On the other side, interest rates are near historic lows, if not at historic lows. So that's going to help people refinance that still are employed and lower that debt burden. So that is a good sign. That is a positive sign. There's not an abundance of inventory for affordable housing, which was mentioned before, and first-time home buyers. So that's a little bit of concern. I think the National Realtor Association thinks that sales will pick back up in the late third, early fourth quarter as maybe this, you know, crisis subsides a little bit. But interest rates are going to be, you know, one of the keys. Now, there's another side to that. When the crisis first hit, we saw some types of financing get, you know, a little tighter. You know, some of the rules have tightened up. A lot of lenders have put credit overlays on there. That's a concern as we move forward. You know, if people are tightening the credit bucket, so that's something we're going to have to kind of keep an eye on.
What does that mean to tighten the credit bucket?
It means, you know, you might have a guideline with a Fannie Mae loan or a Freddie Mac loan or an FHA loan, whatever the case may be. And the lender, because of risk concerns, may put what's called an overlay on top of that, an additional rule, you know, for a credit score or something along those lines, and make it either more expensive or a little bit more difficult to qualify for a loan.
Okay,
that's one of the things we're keeping an eye on.
So when we think back to the Great Recession and some of the issues facing the housing recovery in the aftermath of that, what we learned was that people were getting loans who may not have traditionally qualified otherwise.
Correct.
So you're seeing a possible tightening of available credit opportunities for people.
Yeah, perfect analogy. I think if you went back to the Great Recession, you know, the rules had gotten so lax that, you know, it was very, very easy with stated income, no verification loans. They were rampant. Industry got away from that. And, you know, it's kind of like that needle. You go too far right, you go too far left. You want some balance in that. And over the last, you know, 5 years, we had gotten some good balance. Maybe over the last year or two, you know, it had gotten a little bit, you know, more, you know, less stringent would be a good word. And now I think people have a tendency to overreact because of what their risk or anticipated risk or perceived risk may be. And that's the concern. You know, you've had some large banks, as an example, who said, we're not going to do HELOC home equity loans anymore. So people can't tap the equity in their house. Not everyone has done that, but we've had a couple of very large national banks that have done that. And, you know, it's temporary, but how long does that last?
And that's Ed Hensley. He's president of the Ohio Mortgage Bankers Association. He's also senior vice president and senior mortgage executive for West Banco. We're also joined today by Legal Aid of Southwest Ohio managing attorneys Nick DiNardo and Stephanie Mose. Nick, let me ask you a question that I'd asked Ed moments ago about the way that the rules have evolved and changed as it relates to some of the government-induced recovery efforts. Do you think that these, I guess, programs are being rolled out with rules that evolve and change in a way that are difficult to understand for the average person?
I think for the average person, it has been difficult. They've gotten, you know, bad information from some of the lenders they had called previously. And I think a lot of the guidance that's come out in the past couple of days is common sense type things. As Sherrod Brown said in his statement earlier, you know, there's no way someone who's been out of work for a couple of months, even if they return to work, can make a 3 month or 4 month lump sum payment. So the fact that lenders were telling homeowners that is pretty problematic. So it's pretty obvious that's not going to be a solution to this. I'm glad that this guidance has come out. I think it's going to help a lot of homeowners, and we need to find ways to make sure that, you know, people can stay in their homes and make these programs work, whether that's through forbearance agreements or putting payments onto the end of the loan, or in some cases with some emergency assistance to help people get caught up.
And Stephanie, we heard Ed talk about the possibility that rules will be getting tighter around availability and access to credit. What does that mean for the types of people that you represent, the ones who might find themselves vulnerable to the ebbs and flows of the market more so than others? And what does that end up doing to the housing economy here locally?
You know, I think it goes back, Michael, to the point of there's a lack of affordable housing both for homeowners and for renters in our community. And so the tightening of that credit can be problematic on some fronts. Certainly we need protections and to make sure that credit is appropriate. But a lot of times what we see is credit being denied for people for reasons that are sometimes problematic and that really shouldn't happen. I think a lot of oversight in the lending industry as we go through these period of very quick changes is going to be important. Ed mentioned the Great Recession. It's in the mind of all of us at Legal Aid who also represented clients, homeowners, and tenants during that time. And what we know from that historic period not that long ago is that lenders, even with very clear guidance and direction, struggled and did not always do what they were required to for homeowners. And there was a lot of enforcement that needed to happen and sometimes did not happen and caused challenges. So I really do appreciate Ed sharing that you know, we're in this together and that lenders also don't want to put people from their homes. But again, just even out of the gate, the concerns we saw with people being told, you're not going to, you know, you're going to have to pay this all at once, or we can only give you 90 days forbearance. That guidance was really clear that it was, you know, up to 180 days out of the gate, and yet lenders were getting it wrong, even with really clear guidance. So there's going to be a need for oversight on some of those issues.
All right. I want to give all three of you the opportunity for some parting words here in our last couple of minutes together for people who are listening and are wondering what their options are. Maybe they don't face foreclosure yet. Maybe they are facing it. Stephanie, let's start with you. Just what's the main takeaway that you hope people get today from listening to what the current state of things is?
I think to know that there are some options out there and that certainly there are organizations like Legal Aid and others that are working to make more options available on behalf and with our clients. I do agree with what's been said by, I think, all of us, that communication is key. Reach out to your lender, to your landlord, and let them know that you're struggling, because certainly I hope that there will be a sense that we can all kind of try to protect people and keep them in their homes during this time, that all of us should be working from that very simple principle that at this time of this really unprecedented situation, at least for the last 100 years, we've never seen anything like it, that we really need to all work together so that people remain housed.
And Nick, I'll offer you the same opportunity.
Well, I would just agree with everything Stephanie just said, and said when it comes to renters, we've been talking mostly about homeowners in this conversation, but for folks who are renting, just know that you do have to pay your rent, and if you're out of work, there are sources available to help. And I think the key is communication, whether you're talking to a bank or you're talking to your landlord. There is some duty to pay the rent or to make these mortgage payments, and so we need to find ways to work out these situations so that we can avoid mass homelessness. I mean, one thing we haven't really talked about yet is that I do think while we don't have a statewide moratorium on either foreclosures or on all evictions, what we locally, both the judges of the common pleas and municipal courts and the clerk of courts have been doing a good job trying to address this issue by closing down the courthouse for several months, thinking about spacing issues, thinking about how to docket these cases. So I feel like our local community, it really has come together, you know, on both sides of this issue to try and find good solutions. And so what we need to do is replicate that statewide and nationwide.
And Ed Hensley, I'll give you the last word here.
I think, again, as mentioned, communication is a key. Talk to your lender. Tell them what's going on, what your personal situation is. Take advantage of the resources that are there. There's some great websites that have come out. I know the Mortgage Bankers Association nationally work with the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, the CFPB, that's got a website that can answer a lot of questions. Know what your options are. Try to be as educated as you can. As someone said, we're all in this together. We want to survive this together. We'll come out on the other side. But being, you know, communicative and being educated are critical. And, you know, if you have questions, reach out to the people that are on some of these websites or whoever you can to find out what those options are.
Nick DiNardo and Stephanie Mose are managing attorneys at Legal Aid of Southwest Ohio. And Ed Hensley is the current president of the Ohio Mortgage Bankers Association and senior vice president and senior mortgage executive for West Banco. Thanks to all three of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you.
Up next, we go to Northeast Ohio to talk with a man currently facing eviction. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're now joined by Molly Martin. She's the director of the Strategic Initiatives at Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless. Molly, thanks for being with us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be on the call.
It's our pleasure to have you. Thank you. And also on the phone is Springfield, Ohio resident Stephen Jenkins. He's facing eviction. Stephen, we appreciate you coming on to talk about this challenging situation.
Not a problem. Glad I could help.
Well, let's start with you, Stephen. Talk a little bit about the situation that you're in.
Okay. January 27th, I was laid off by my employer. I didn't know that was even going to happen. I went ahead and paid my rent for February, February 1st. February 14th, I received a vacate notice from my landlord who my lease was through May 2nd. And he said that basically they didn't want to renew the lease and basically wanted us to be moved out by May 2nd.
Is that because of your the change in your employment status?
Yes. Because I got laid off, I think he found out about it and got nervous and wanted to end the lease. So I sent him a text explaining to him that I, on February the 15th, once I received the notice that I'd already filed for unemployment, I was drawing unemployment by February 14th, which was a miracle in itself. I got it in 3 weeks. And I'd also filed for Social Security, which was going to, my first check was due in the second week of March. Okay, I'd already paid our February rent, and the landlord called me back because of the text. And we discussed it, and I told him I would be receiving Social Security the second Wednesday of every month from now on because of my retirement. And he said, well, if that's the best you can do, we did. He agreed to the late payment. I'd made a few late payments in the past where we worked it out, and he had no problem with it. So I agreed. We agreed for me to send my March rent on March the 11th. On March 9th, he filed for an eviction and basically said, so I called him up and discussed it, and I said, I don't understand what's going on. Can we work this out, et cetera? His statement was to me is, don't try to shame me, but basically you need to get out.
Okay.
So
are you still currently in your home?
Yes, we're currently still in the same place that we have been abiding. Yeah, I haven't moved.
Okay.
We can't find any place.
Well, hang on. We're going to come back to you in just a moment, Stephen. We're also talking with Molly Martin, the Director of Strategic Initiatives at Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless. Molly, Stephen's story doesn't seem to be COVID-19 related in the context that he offered there. So how common pre-pandemic is a story like his?
Well, I think that, you know, Stephen's situation is related to the pandemic in the sense that once his eviction was issued, he got a hearing date, which has been postponed, but he does have an eviction hearing in 2 weeks, which is still right in the heart of the pandemic. And I think what he had just referenced to, you know, trying to look for a place to live during a pandemic is really challenging, especially when he would like to just remain in his housing, as we all want to continue sheltering in place during this time. But I also think his situation sheds light on a lot of people who are kind of juggling filing for unemployment, thinking about childcare, thinking about what it would mean if they got an eviction because they were just maybe 1 month behind on rent, and what that situation means for their family, and just the activity of looking for housing if you can't stay in your home, you know, presents a real crisis for a lot of people. I mean, I know that there are 1.1 million people in Ohio who have filed for unemployment, and half of them have received those benefits, but that also means that the other half haven't yet, and rent is still due on the first of every month.
And so what is your advice to Stephen?
My advice to Stephen is, I mean, in his specific situation, he is willing to pay the rent and the back rent that his landlord is refusing, and I just hope that when he goes to his eviction hearing that in court that they see that he has a willingness to pay, that he has the funds to do so, that he is having an exceptionally difficult time trying to make arrangements to find another place to live if he does, in fact, get evicted. So I think just showing up to his hearing with legal representation and showing that he has worked to communicate with his landlord and to pay his rent and back rent is the best that he can do.
Well, Molly, talk a little bit about the disparity in government response across Ohio as it relates particularly to rent moratoriums and other assistance opportunities for people not to be evicted.
Sure. Yeah. So at the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless, we've been responding to the fact that there are so many people in our community that are homeless. And I think given the just vast unemployment and people at risk in their housing, we want to try and prevent homelessness for as many people who are, you know, one paycheck away from entering a homelessness crisis. So back in March, I know that the government had issued a statewide eviction moratorium for commercial tenants. And we had thought that the best policy, you know, following other states who had issued a statewide eviction moratorium, would help allow for flexibility for tenants. I know that there's still rent that is due, but calling on the state to issue an eviction moratorium for rental evictions with tenant protections would help give flexibility to tenants. So, you know, mirroring some federal legislation on eviction moratorium that would ban late fees and maybe even call for mediation between landlords and tenants so that they could work out an arrangement in a specific time frame where people can work to get their rent in time without facing the fear of an eviction is really critical. And I'll also add, too, that, you know, there are 3 million people across Ohio that are living in rental housing. A lot of them are in private rental housing that aren't covered by an eviction moratorium offered for HUD-backed loans and programs there, and that the one-time $1,200 payment works out to be about a month's full-time wages at the federal minimum wage. And we know that that isn't enough to pay rent for a two-bedroom apartment anywhere in the country. So I think, too, and I think the great bill that Senator Brown is sponsoring is going to be really critical in the coming months in the form of rental assistance. And I think that we had called on the state to issue an eviction moratorium because we know doing this work that systems can be slow to respond and that communities are just now taking proposals for organizations that are equipped to deploy rental assistance, but it might take until July before the bulk of that assistance becomes available to people. So how do we anticipate spreading the word to those who don't know how to navigate the system if they've never relied on public benefits before, if they have no history of accessing public assistance? I think getting to the people who are in need, who have never experienced the sort of emergency before, is a lot of work. And we know that it's a lot of work to and a lot of trauma to navigate a system to look for assistance. So I think a lot of the call for issuing an eviction moratorium is accounting for that delay, knowing that the emergency is happening now. And that halting evictions does help flatten the curve if, you know, each stage of the eviction process and going to court over the coming months does technically have the potential to increase COVID transmission.
Okay, that's Molly Martin from the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless. I've got a minute left from Stephen Jenkins, a Springfield, Ohio resident who is facing eviction. Stephen, in a couple of weeks, it sounds like you're due to have your eviction hearing. What are you feeling right now?
I'm scared to death. I'm afraid that my landlord doesn't care. He will not negotiate. And because Carr County is a very conservative county, landlords seem to always come out on top. Tenants always lose. And if Sherrod Brown is listening to this, I would love for him or one of his representatives to come and sit in with me on my hearing and let them see how tenants are actually treated during eviction. I'm sorry, I'm not a second-rate citizen. I'm an American citizen, and I have rights, too.
Stephen Jenkins, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your difficult story with us, and we do hope that there is a positive outcome for you in the near future. Molly Martin, also from the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless, we appreciate the time you gave us as well, Molly. Thank you.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.